Lake Effect brings you conversations about what's happening in Milwaukee and the people, places, and organizations that shape the community. This is Lake Effect Spotlight from WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.
More than 30 years ago, Wisconsin signed a law that required schools to teach about Native American history, culture, and tribal sovereignty. It's known as Act 31. The law was created in part because of a violent controversy over Ojibwe spearfishing rights fueled by ignorance over those rights. State leaders realized that education about Native American tribes was needed in Wisconsin schools, and Act 31 was signed into law in 1989. To learn more about the history of Act 31 and where it stands today, WUWM education reporter Emily Files spoke with J.P. Leary, a UW Green Bay associate professor and author of the book, The Story of Act 31.
In this book, you say that to understand how Act 31 became law, you have to go back to the controversy around Ojibwe people's rights to spearfish in Wisconsin, what's also known as the Walleye War. So what was that controversy?
It all stems from really a lack of opportunity to learn about the history, culture, and tribal sovereignty of the federally recognized peoples in Wisconsin. If you were someone who the only thing you learned about Native people was from school, you didn't learn much. Your opportunities to learn were very, very limited. What happened is when the Ojibwe peoples sued to assert their rights because the state government had been interfering with their exercise for over a century, they finally won in 1983 in a case known as either as the Voight decision or as Le Coudray 1. So this controversy, this thing that many people had not known much of anything about, became something that was the cause of public controversy, public violence, and which I argue in the book is itself an educational outcome from lack of opportunities to learn.
So you mentioned that this goes back to the treaty rights of the Ojibwe people in Wisconsin. So let's talk about the treaty rights and the treaties themselves. Why were the treaties put in place and what did they say?
The primary treaties that were land cession treaties in Wisconsin among the Ojibwe people were 1837 and 1842. So what they did in those treaties, in 1837, it's also known as the Pine Tree Treaty because the United States was very interested in the timber resource. And so they negotiated with the Ojibwe people. And there are different understandings of that treaty. But what's very clear is the Ojibwe people reserved the right to hunt, fish, and gather within that territory ceded. They retained the right to make their way of life as they had done. And in 1842, what the federal government was very interested in was copper. And again, really thinking about economic development of that new Wisconsin territory. And once again, those Ojibwe tribal leaders retained the right to hunt, fish, and gather within that territory. They reserved the right explicitly to maintain their way of life. Once those treaties were ratified, once the reservations were created, there were a number of things the state government did to interfere with the exercise of those rights. There were people who were hunting or fishing off the reservation within the ceded territory that were cited for poaching. They might be cited. They might have their equipment confiscated. They might have their catch confiscated. They might be jailed. They might be fined. The Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals in 1983 affirmed the continued existence of and validity of those reserved rights from treaties in 1837 and 1842. That treaty rights controversy became open and ugly and often violent, and it was termed in the news media and in some of the later scholarship as the Walleye War. And so one of the things that I'm arguing in the book is, yes, that was part of the immediate impetus for creating the instructional requirements in Wisconsin for teaching about Native people, but that it's part of a broader history, and that it was one just maybe the most immediate and most sort of spectacular in terms of scale, spectacular in a bad way, And there was a real fear that someone was going to get killed at a Wisconsin boat landing. There were examples of pipe bombs and people being shot at with firearms, people being shot at with wrist rockets, people being harassed, having their tires slashed, having their vehicles vandalized, and just a lot of things that were harassment of people legally exercising their court-affirmed reserved rights.
This kind of realization about Wisconsinites' lack of knowledge about Native American tribes and treaty rights came to a head with the spearfishing controversy and the embarrassment that it caused to state leaders. So
and harm. I think it's sure. You know, actual physical harm, economic harm, harm to the social fabric of communities, harm to families.
So what was the intent of Act 31? What did Act 31 set out to change?
The piece that's often thought of as the heart and soul of Act 31 speaks to K-12 social studies curriculum. And it requires school districts to provide instruction in history, culture, and tribal sovereignty at least twice in the elementary grades and at least once in high school. And, you know, in 2023, we look back at that and we say, well, what does provide instruction mean? But in 1989, with Wisconsin's long tradition of local control of education, provide instruction about the history, culture, and tribal sovereignty of the federally recognized tribes and bands in the state was the most specific curriculum content directive issued to Wisconsin schools until that time. Because of that tradition of local control, districts can provide that instruction wherever they'd like. Most commonly, it's in the context of Wisconsin history in fourth or fifth grade. Most commonly in the context of maybe U.S. history or world history in middle school. And coming up in high school, it might be in U.S. history. It might be in a civics and government class. There are at least one school, Black River Falls, that includes this content in all of their social studies offerings within the school district.
So Act 31 was intended to provide all public school students with knowledge about Native American history and culture and present day issues. And so how do you think Wisconsin has lived up to that goal?
Implementation has been uneven, right? And maybe that's being a bit charitable. One of the things that we see is difference in the view of what this was supposed to actually do. I think there were some among the coalition that created it that saw it as it was okay as being largely symbolic. And even the state superintendent at the time was saying, I wouldn't expect a whole week on this.
A whole week of instruction on it.
Right. Yeah. And so that's where I think about, like, if you want to do something meaningful as opposed to just do something, right? Provide instruction can mean a whole range of things. Provide instruction can be very, very minimal. Right. And that minimum has never fully been defined. And so one of the things that we see come about is uneven implementation. Right. In Black River Falls, Wisconsin, a since retired social studies teacher who now teaches for us at UW Green Bay, Paul Ricken, worked with Charity Thunder and others in the Ho-Chunk community to begin to transform what had been their initial response to Act 31. So they found a way to infuse this content into everything they were doing in the social studies curriculum. And so in the context of civics, because they are located at the administrative headquarters of the Ho-Chunk Nation, they were able to go out to the tribal office building. They were able to go out and visit the tribal courts. And they were able to have that firsthand interaction with families, communities, and nation that was their neighbors. And so I think that's still one of the best approaches that we see. While we have those places that are, like Black River Falls, really modeling great approaches, what I see in my classroom now is I do an activity on the second day of class. What's your prior knowledge? What have you learned? What have you been taught? And we got to be a little bit humble about it, because in some cases I'm asking them to think back to when they were in fourth grade, when perhaps earlier. And most of my students report very minimal opportunity to learn. They tend to report that way more often than not, what they learned was from mass media, not from in school. They cite Brother Bear, Pocahontas, Twilight, these sorts of things as their sources of information, rather than what they learned from their teachers, right? And so it may be that it wasn't offered to them. They didn't have that opportunity to learn. Or it could be that it was taught in a way that was perhaps superficial and not engaging.
So does it seem like Act 31 was more of a symbolic victory than a practical, like, change in Wisconsin?
I think, practically speaking, what Act 31 did is it provided some political cover to teachers, administrators, and school districts that wanted to do something meaningful, and that helped insulate them from the backlash, because they could point to that law and say, we are required to do this. I think it did that. I think it created some opportunity for innovation. It created some opportunity for partnerships and conversations. I think it's been consistently under-resourced, right? That there's been this specific requirement, but there's not been similar specific resources to support it.
J.P. Leary is a First Nations Studies professor at UW-Green Bay and author of The Story of Act 31. He spoke with WUWM's education reporter, Emily Files.
You can find more interviews like this one by visiting wuwm.com/lakeeffect. And while you're there, subscribe to the Lake Effect Spotlight podcast.